Wrestling Radio. LockerRoomHQ.com. You press your lock up against his body. Now you're stuck, but you're lying down and dirty. You don't care where you're going. Anywhere is better than I'm going. Anywhere is better. Anywhere is better. Anywhere is better than. Anywhere is better than here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Wrestling Radio on Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. And as always, I'm your host, Dirt, and today we're here to talk about Monday Night Raw and TNA Impact. But before we get into that, there are a few news and notes that we should discuss here. First of all, of course, is the tragic news of the passing of Chris Kanyon. Chris Kanyon overdosed on pills in order to take his own life. He left a note basically apologizing for doing it. He had some financial problems as of late. He was one of those guys who, he loved wrestling. He basically gave his life to wrestling. All he ever wanted to do was be a wrestler, and be in professional wrestling, do professional wrestling. And he had a pretty decent run in WCW, and he saved his money like you're supposed to. And then once WCW folded, he went to WWE, but he just really didn't fit, you know, the WWE style. He didn't wrestle the way they wanted guys to wrestle. Chris Kanyon was a spot guy. He liked to come up with interesting moves and reversals, which on their own looked great, but they often didn't fit the psychology of a match. And that was something that WWE, they just... they weren't real hot on that, so he eventually was released, and he ran around the indies. He came out of the closet. He tried to sue WWE for saying that they had fired him because of his sexual preferences, but the lawsuit never stuck. It was dismissed, and so he just tried to move on with other things in his life, but wrestling was always what he wanted to do and where he wanted to be, and so he enjoyed doing it, and without that part in his life, he had become depressed. He started to run through the money that he had saved up over all the years, and eventually just found himself in a difficult spot in life, and just decided to take some pills, and he finished himself off. So very tragic, very sad. This is not believed to be in any way steroid related. This is not believed at this point to be, you know, anything having to do with brain damage. You know, a lot of guys, ever since the whole Chris Benoit thing, there's been a lot of research into guys who take concussions, hard unprotected chair shots, the damage it actually does long term to their brains, in boxing, football, you know, anything with a lot of contact. And it's not believed at this point that that really had anything to do with it. However, they will attempt to do an autopsy to find out for certain. But definitely tragic news, and we, you know, we're going to throw out our thoughts and prayers to his family, because I know they're having a hard time right now. The other news, not as tragic, Christopher Daniels was released by TNA. He made an appearance at the ROH show. ROH did I believe it was an internet-only pay-per-view. Ran about 4 hours. I have not seen it yet, but I'm hoping to at some point. It's odd because they're playing it on the internet, but not as video on demand, or at least not yet. I don't know if they're planning on changing that at some point, but it's just playing at different points, and you don't, you know, pause it, you don't rewind it. It's just you log in and you watch it. So it's you have to find some time to you know, to be able to sit down and watch it. But Christopher Daniels did make the appearance there, and it was later confirmed by TNA that they had released him. He did not, as far as we can tell, he did not ask for this release. As far as we can tell, TNA released him. Hogan, Bischoff, they were not hot on the guy, and so they just decided to cut him loose. It's a little worrisome around the TNA locker room right now, because guys are wondering, you know, what else might be following down the line. But that's something to keep in mind. Also, we don't have ratings in yet for TNA and Raw last night. I was hoping that the Fast Nationals would be up online already, and it's not. So I'm going to keep an eye out while we're recording the show. If I can get a hold of those Fast Nationals, I will let you guys know. But as of yet, they are not appearing. Next week's episode of Raw will be hosted by David Hasselhoff. And there's only one match announced, which is Eve Torres versus Maryse for the Divas Championship. So we'll see if anything else gets announced throughout this week. But, you know, that's what you're looking at for Monday Night Raw next week. As far as last night's episode of Monday Night Raw, it was an okay episode. There were a lot of questionable things in there that I don't know what happened exactly. It seemed like there were a lot of odd decisions made, which may be leading up to things in the future, but as far as what's happening right now, they really didn't seem to fit in the overall flow of things. But we'll go through it here. We'll start that. Jack Swagger came out at the beginning, and he was wearing a full piece, full three-piece suit. He had his executive legal pad, his binder, whatever it was, the same thing he had on SmackDown when he did his State of the Championship address. So he came down to make another speech. He basically said that he will be on SmackDown from now on because he is the SmackDown champion, and basically nobody on Raw can compare to his abilities. He was cutting a fine little promo here until right here John Cena's music hit and Cena came out. And you could instantly see the vast chasm of charisma difference between a guy like John Cena and a guy like Jack Swagger. Cena came out and immediately, you know, there are guys in the crowd that are going to continue to heckle him till his final days, because that's the cool thing to do. But listening to John Cena speak right after Jack Swagger, you can tell that Swagger still needs some work. Don't get me wrong, I like Swagger. I like that he's been catapulted like this to the top, and I think given some time, he might be able to, you know, actually grow into the position a little bit better. But you could really see here tonight that he's still green when it comes to dealing with the top guys. So, but John Cena basically came out and said, you know, boy, it's just a shame. You're going to be leaving for SmackDown and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's kind of funny because you said that nobody on Raw can compete with you. So I tell you what, how about you and I have a match? I'll even put my title on the line. And Jack Swagger started to decline, started to back off when Randy Orton's music hit. Orton came out and said that he had beaten Swagger last week, and so therefore he wanted another shot at Swagger, this time with the title on the line. So instantly people thought that we were going to see Randy Orton become the new world champion, and that was going to be the end of Jack Swagger after a few days as champion. But then Showmiz came out, and they basically told everybody to shut up and get off TV because this show is all about them, which I guess it was fine. You got to do something with these guys, but it really didn't seem to fit with everything else going on in this promo. It just seemed like they kind of shoehorned in the Unified Tag Team Champions just to further along whatever match they wanted to pull out of this, which, I mean, you got to do that sometimes, but it just kind of broke the whole flow of everything that was going on here. So basically, Showmiz just said, you know, everybody needs to get the heck out of here. And David Otunga, who is one of the rookies on NXT, was the guest host for tonight because his girlfriend is Jennifer Hudson, who has won, I don't know, did she win an Academy Award, I think, a Grammy, whatever. She is famous, so therefore he is going on the gimmick that he's also famous, which is funny because she was not on the show at all tonight. He was. They, you know, made mention of her and showed a couple pictures of him with her, but she really had nothing to do with the show, which was a little odd, but whatever. So basically, Otunga said that it was going to be Orton versus Swagger, and it's going to be Show Miz versus John Cena and Batista. And then he basically left, and Cena was wondering how he had gotten screwed, and suddenly Orton grabbed Cena, tried to hit him with an RKO, but Cena threw him off and basically threw him onto Swagger, and so Orton immediately hit the RKO on Swagger and dropped him. This segment, if this segment wasn't designed to bury Jack Swagger, it accomplished it anyway. He looked bad. He was wearing that big suit, which looked nice on him, except he's standing in the middle of the ring, and he starts sweating. All the other guys come out. They're wearing T-shirts. They're wearing trunks. You know, they're barely wearing anything, and he's out there in that huge three-piece suit, just sweat pouring off his brow. The other problem was, all these guys come out to talk to him, and Jack Swagger just has this this blank look on his face. Not so much like he's determined or he's trying to keep his composure, but it's more like, hey, I'm watching a show unfold around me, and I'm not really a participant, I'm just watching. So, Swagger obviously needs some help. He either needs to have a manager, or he just needs to get in a lot of experience on the road, perhaps doing promos at every house show, having guys interrupt him, and working with them, because he was such a fish out of water. And he didn't come across as someone who deserved to be there with all those other guys. Which is a theme that continued later on throughout the show, but we'll worry about that later. They had Kofi Kingston come out, and he is in a match with Sheamus. Sheamus eventually hit the razor's edge and got the pin. This is one of those matches where, you know, Kofi had that push. He screwed up something small in a match with Randy Orton. Randy Orton badmouthed him. Kofi immediately lost his push. Sheamus goes to have this feud with Triple H, goes to WrestleMania. The two of them have a match. The match is pretty good, but Triple H wins. Triple H winning at WrestleMania hurt Sheamus, and Sheamus comes out of this in a match with Kofi Kingston. That's got to show you a little bit of how Sheamus is... that loss at WrestleMania did not help him. A loss at WrestleMania for Triple H would not hurt Triple H, but the loss for Sheamus just really kind of killed his momentum. But still, Sheamus beat Kofi Kingston, and after he hit him with the razor's edge, he crawled under the ring, pulled out his metal pipe that he beat Triple H with last week, and attacked Kofi with it. They cut to a shot of Triple H walking around backstage, and they said, oh, it's Triple H, he's coming down to the ring. And it didn't look like he was coming to the ring. It looked like that random shot of when the guy, you know, comes to the building late, and they're just kind of walking in and waltzing around. Triple H didn't look focused, he didn't look determined, it didn't look like he had any speed to his step trying to get to the ring. And Sheamus is just kind of sitting there looking around like, you know, is Triple H coming out right now? Is he about to emerge through the curtain? Either he forgot what was going on, or something happened there, but that was a little awkward. So they go to commercial, they come back, and Sheamus is in the ring cutting a promo on Triple H. Because apparently, when they cut to Triple H to show him heading toward the ring, he had, in fact, just entered the building, and he apparently wanted to do about three or four laps through the hallways underneath all the seats before he actually went out to the ring. So here we are, you know, 7 minutes later, and Sheamus is cutting this promo, and then finally Triple H comes out when Sheamus starts talking about how Triple H was crying and he's a little girl and whatever. So Triple H came down to the ring and pulled off his leather jacket and started to climb in, and Sheamus was standing there with the pipe just begging Triple H to get in the ring. So Triple H backed off, climbed off the ring apron, and then reached underneath the ring and pulled out the sledgehammer. He jumped in and blocked Sheamus's metal pipe using the sledgehammer, hit Sheamus in the gut with the sledgehammer. Sheamus rolled to the outside, pulled himself up on the announce table. Triple H tried to hit him on the announce table, instead hit a monitor, a bunch of fake sparks and everything shot out. Sheamus took that opportunity to dive into the crowd and make a run for it. And so Triple H got in the ring and he said, "What a silly Irishman bringing a pipe to a sledgehammer fight." And dropped the microphone and left, which is a common phrase, I'm told. I think my grandpappy, used to say that's what Irishmen do, is they bring a pipe to a sledgehammer fight. That's, I don't know. Anyway, regardless, they then had Eve Torres win a battle royal. They had Maryse sitting at the announce table. They brought out Eve, the Bella Twins, Jillian Hall, Gail Kim, Kelly Kelly, Alicia Fox, Katie Lee Burchill, and Rosa Mendez. They were in an evening gown match, and some of them, like Kelly Kelly and the Bella Twins, had long evening gowns on. They had a difficult time getting in the ring because they, couldn't move their legs to get through the ring ropes. So that was a little interesting, but it was one of those things where they announced this battle royal and it started, bell rang, and within 5 seconds the first people were getting tossed out. They did not want to waste a lot of time on this, but for whatever reason they had to have it. So I have to actually give Jillian Hall some credit here, because what happened was she went to toss Eve to the outside, and Eve, caught herself on the ropes and pulled herself up while Jillian was celebrating. So Jillian turns around and sees, Eve is still standing there. And so she runs and dives at her, and she flies between the top rope and the middle rope to the outside. Eve, jumps out of the way, steps aside, and Jillian just flies through, and it was brilliant. I mean, I've seen guys attempt to do that dive out of the ring. Michael Shard here in the local independent promotion, that was one that he liked to do a lot. When I was manager against him, I had started out managing him and then I worked against him. That was one of the things that he liked to do, was to dive out onto me and attack me in the middle of a match. And so he would do that move. And he did it very well. She did it as good as he did. I've seen a lot of other guys attempt to do it, and just it comes off looking goofy, or they get caught on the ropes, or whatever. Jillian, she flew like Superman, or Supergirl, if you prefer. And it was just awesome. Eve won, and she celebrated, so it's going to be Eve versus Maryse for the Divas title next week on Raw. So I guess that's something for you to get excited about. They did the standard backstage skit. Utunga was back there talking with all these guys who were doing, fake laughs and pretending to be his friends. Terrible. Anyway, Santino came in and made some jokes, and Utunga had said something about how he had them bring this big bowl of green M&Ms because he only wanted green M&Ms, and Santino pointed out that Hornswoggle was eating them. So they cut, and there's Hornswoggle throwing a whole bunch in his mouth. Utunga tells him to stop. He drops him back in the bowl. He spits out the ones in his mouth. One of his lackeys leaps over the table to try to grab him, but misses. Hornswoggle runs out. All of Otunga's guys chase after Hornswoggle. Santino leaves. I guess there was a joke there that was supposed to be funny. The only thing really funny, Utunga calls himself the A-List. Nobody knows this because nobody watches NXT. So Santino comes in and he says he's looking for Mr. T because he's there for the A-Team. And Utunga says, no, not the A-Team, the A-List. And you just kind of got this feeling like nobody in the arena had any idea that David Otunga's, gimmick, his moniker, is that he's the A-List. Like, I don't think one single person in that arena had any idea what he was talking about. So he's talking about A-Team, and he's looking for Mr. T, and Santino does his Pity the Fool joke. And people are like, oh, yeah, A-Team, yeah, that's funny. What does David Utunga look like Rampage Jackson or something? They didn't understand. And it was kind of amusing how that joke fell flat because nobody watches NXT, and no one could figure out why this guy was host of Raw. They next did Cena and Batista versus Show Miz. It was basically, Cena beat up on Miz for a while. Show took over and started beating up on Cena. Miz, once he saw that Cena was beat up, tried to get back in the match to show that he could beat up on Cena for a while. But Cena eventually, you know, got the better of him, tried to tag Batista. But of course, Batista jumped off the apron and left. And so Cena tried to chase Batista up the ramp. And Batista basically shrugged him off and left. And Cena was not able to make it back to the ring before time expired. So Cena standing up on the stage, looking down at the ring while the referee calls for the bell, and Show Miz wins, retains the titles. So Otunga comes out, and he says that Show Miz will be defending their tag team titles again, but this time it'll be against Cena and himself. So David Otunga just booked himself in the main event for the Undisputed Tag Team titles with John Cena, who arguably is the, you know, strongest guy on Raw. You could, you know, if you want to debate between him and, you know, Batista. But regardless, this, it was kind of a dumb move in the, I don't know, in the big picture, to put David Otunga in this match. But as far as this guy, full of himself, incoming rookie, put in a position of power, pushing himself into that match as John Cena's partner to try to beat Big Show and Miz for the tag team titles, that worked. Like, there was something that was, that if you were that heel guy, that's what you would have done. It's along the same lines as that cashing in the Money in the Bank to be champion. Guy doesn't deserve to be champion, but he got the luck of the draw. He got that belt, or he got the briefcase, so that he can go out and try to win the belt in the worst time possible. Big Show and Miz had just had a match. Cena was kind of worn out, but Cena obviously got the upper hand on these guys and just needed Batista to kind of finish things off, and they would have won the title. So Otunga puts himself in that situation, and it looks like he's easily going to become a tag team champion. I mean, as far as, you know, kayfabe goes. I don't think anybody actually expected David Otunga to be walking around with the tag team title belts. But regardless, storyline-wise, made sense. I was fine with it. They next had Ted DiBiase come out with the Million Dollar Belt. He faced off against Christian. He basically talked about, his dad tried to console him last week after the Legends Lumberjack match, and he said it didn't make up for all the years that his dad was on the road and didn't pay enough attention to him and didn't treat him like a son. And so his dad had given him the million-dollar title, and he said he was more than happy to take it because it was worth so much and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, Christian comes out, they have this match, and it was actually a very good match. I enjoyed the heck out of this match. Again, it shows, it sucks for Ted DiBiase, because you know that WWE doesn't take Christian very seriously, and now he's been dropped to this point where he's at the same level as, Ted DiBiase and Christian are now at the same level, so you can tell that, WWE just isn't going to be pushing Ted DiBiase Jr. very hard, at least until something happens, they're either waiting for in storyline, or they're waiting for DiBiase Jr. to show something of himself. But they did announce, though, that only three people before had ever worn the million-dollar belt. Of course, Ted DiBiase Sr., wrestling superstar Virgil, which if you go to any comic book convention in the United States, you'll see him sitting there alone at a table. You can ask him about that. And then, of course, the ringmaster, Steve Austin, Stone Cold. So it was kind of amusing that they actually pointed all of that out. It was pretty good. It looked basically like Christian was going to win with a crossbody off the top rope. But when he went to follow up, he got thrown into the post. DiBiase hit him with Dream Street and got the pin. So at least he's, he made up for his loss last week, although hopefully Christian and DiBiase will have a three times a charm match, whatever you want to call it, and we'll see what happens. Here was the announcement that in a few weeks there's going to be a three-hour WWE draft special. So for all of you who don't find 2 hours to be enough, there's your three-hour special. And, of course, they announced David Hasselhoff will be the host next week, which Fine, whatever. I guess Alf was busy. They showed Randy Orton coming out to face Jack Swagger. This was a non-title match, and I guess if it had been a title match, I would have expected Swagger to win, to hold on to his belt, unless they were going to completely bury him. But the fact that it was non-title, I just kind of assumed they made it non-title so that Orton could win, because they believe in Orton and they're going to push him. They don't believe in Jack Swagger. He just got that, fluke win. But Swagger, I have to say, Swagger looked good. Even though he lost to Randy Orton, he still had a good showing. It wasn't a complete burial of Swagger, because he did get in a lot of moves. He was allowed to hit some of his, his key things. Again, they tried to kind of play it off as he's a rookie. Well, not a rookie, but he's a younger guy. He did win the title on a fluke, but, he's got a lot to learn. And I kind of also got the feeling that if they play it right, they can really do this as Swagger lost in non-title. Therefore, if there's a title rematch, Jack Swagger can win, because they can say that he's scouted Orton. He's been in the ring with Orton. He knows what to do now. So I guess in a sense that's valid, and I'm fine letting it go at that. I've lost a lot of faith in a lot of things around WWE lately, so we'll see how it plays out in the long run. But still, fun match, good match between those guys. They next did Big Show and Miz against David Otunga and John Cena, and it was basically the same match we saw earlier in the night. They had Cena, he started, they let Otunga wrestle for a few minutes before he tagged Cena back in. They had Big Show get the heat on Cena. Miz kind of beat him up for a while. When Cena finally went to tag Otunga back in to finish off the match, Otunga just jumped off the ring apron and walked off. And Big Show punched John Cena in the head, knocked him out, got the pin. They had Batista come out, grab Cena, hit him with a Batista bomb. Otunga was standing on the entryway and said, Batista still has one announcement to make. And Batista got down in John Cena's face and said he's invoking his rematch clause. He wants it at Extreme Rules. And this time there will be no tapouts, because the only way they can win is to be the last man standing. So, there you go. You have a match for Extreme Rules, Batista versus Cena. It's their rubber match. It's going to be last man standing, so, brutal. That's fine. Looks good. Otunga came out, played the part of a pretty good heel. His performance in the ring still looked, a little green. He didn't do a whole lot. He only did a couple moves, and they looked like, I've seen guys train before, and those were some pretty standard training moves. I guess part of his problem is his facials really aren't all the way there. I thought Swagger looked fine in his match, although I still think he should have won because he is the champion. But again, like I said, they could have him lose here non-title, do a title rematch. He's learned from his mistakes, perhaps. And, all in all, I was fine with most of the show, even though a lot of that stuff, it just seemed like, why would Show Miz come out in the middle of that confrontation of everybody else? Because they weren't really involved in any of those storylines. They just kind of had them there for the sake of inserting them into the mix. So again, that's going to wrap it up for Monday Night Raw. We're going to stop, take a quick break, listen to a song, and then we will come back, talk about TNA Impact. Also, these songs. People have asked, where do I find these songs? Most of them I find online. Some of them people have emailed me. We recycle a lot of them because I just kind of run out of songs after a while. So if you run across some, try to cut down on foul language. I want to keep our podcasts in the family-friendly area of iTunes and Podbean and whatnot. But you find some songs you'd like to have them in the mix, email them to me or put them up on SendSpace, Mega Upload, Rapid Share, someplace like that. Send me the link. I'd be more than happy to play them on here. If you want to create your own, use Drops of the Show, Drops of WWE. That's fine. Feel free. Knock yourself out. I'd like to hear what you guys come up with. But that's the deal with the song. So if you got one you want us to play, feel free to send it my way. Otherwise, you're going to get a repeat or three-peat or decapeat, like the one we're going to listen to today, which is one of my favorites, The Cold-Blooded Sausage Maker.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world television champion, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, welcome.
I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. This is going to cease to exist. It's going to stop now. I don't play no game. And I don't take no prisoners. Margaret, 2.5 years old. And I tell her a story about the cold-blooded sausage maker that's walking through the woods. And these little pigs run around. And he grabs the little pigs. I'm the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. And you the little piggy. And you running around, but always in that story, when she's scared and her eyes are big as silver dollar. The American Dream comes and saves the little piggy. But in this case, I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. Cold-blooded sausage maker. I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. I am the cold-blooded sausage maker. And I hope my mama don't call David and get on for me talking this way. But she ain't no lady.
All right. Another reason why we do one of those breaks is because it'll give my voice a chance to recharge a little bit. I went to an elementary school this morning, talked with some little kids. And so that was kind of fun, but it killed my voice a little bit. But still, going up now against TNA, TNA's Impact. This is what they had going against Raw. And remember, Impact actually started an hour early. So I kind of wonder how many of their faithful remembered that it started an hour early. And how many of them didn't pay any attention to that. It's going to hurt their ratings overall. We'll see. But they showed a recap of what happened last week. And then apparently this show was titled Advantage Team Flair. Now, WWE also titles their shows, but they usually don't stay what they are. But I guess TNA now has decided they're just going to put the title there at the beginning. Or someone messed up. I don't know. But they showed Christy Hemme backstage, and she was talking about an 8-knockout match. It's going to be the Lock Box Challenge. There are 4 boxes, which things like either a Knockouts title match contract, Terra Spider Poison, a strip tease, and the actual Knockouts title. So the title is so great, it's locked in a box, and you can win it by getting a key. Anyway, it's funny because they laid out the boxes, they had them sitting out to show everybody. It was striptease, title, spider, contract. And at the end of the show, they said these boxes have been randomly arranged here, so we don't know what's in them. So the ladies go to open them, and then they reveal what they've won. And it's funny because the reveal was that the boxes were laid out in just the opposite order as what you saw them earlier in the night. They just basically took the one that was in the number 4 spot earlier in the night, put it in number 1. Number 3 became 2, 2 became 3, and 1 became 4. So they just flipped them, and that was how you randomly mix them up. But anyway, Christy Hemme was talking about all of the stuff that are in these boxes. The beautiful people came in. Velvet Sky talked a whole bunch. Eventually, Lacey Von Erich came in from the shower, covered in a towel, and talked about that, you know, tonight everybody may be able to see Lacey Von Erich strip, and it'll be the happiest night for everybody. This so reeks of the Attitude Era of WWE. This is something that was apparently something Vince Russo pushed for when he was in WWE, tried to bring to WCW. They're really pushing hard now to try to get people. You may see someone actually strip. And hopefully, anyone watching is actually smart enough to realize you're not going to see any nudity on this show. But yet, they're still hoping that someone is going to think there's going to be enough titillation that they need to tune in to the wrestling promotion called TNA to see some T and A. And it came off as a little sad. It was really desperate. But, you know, again, that's what wrestling was for a long time, and, you know, the company being where they're at right now, basically pulling everything from the past together, I guess, you know, you can kind of... They brought back the NWO. So they're going back to this freaky striptease type stuff, whatever. I mean, I guess my biggest problem is that most of the knockouts are no divas. You know what I mean? The WWE divas have a particular look to them, and that look is not covered in tattoos. I know, Sween Hollick, dude, you're covered in tattoos. You like tattoos, that's awesome. I'm not having thoughts about you that I'm having about knockouts and divas. Doesn't bother me as much on a dude, because dude likes ink. But, I don't know, when I see females with the tattoo sleeves and whatever, that's not a look that I find attractive on a female. And I'll leave it, and maybe you guys are. Maybe you guys are. Maybe that's hot to you. You know, to see a woman with snakes on her arm or something. And if, then more power to you, if that's what you'd like. I just kind of get this feeling like TNA's role for the longest time has been trying to recover that lost WCW crowd, those Southern wrestling fans. And this really isn't the way to do that. But regardless, maybe those fans are just gone. Maybe they've realized it's time to just give up on that crowd that actually likes wrestling. Who knows? But we had, Team Hogan, Jeff Jarrett, Hulk Hogan, Abyss came down to the ring. They talked about how it doesn't matter who's going to be on Team Flair. Hulk Hogan has said that Abyss is his go-to guy. He's the team captain. And Abyss took the mic and just said, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who's on that other team, because they're going to kick their ass regardless. It was a fine promo. I mean, there wasn't a problem really with Abyss's promo, but again, just, you know, same thing you've heard a million times on any wrestling show. Can't really fault that, because that's what wrestling is. But they had Ric Flair still in the wheelchair, being pushed by Chelsea, Sting, Beer Money, Desmond Wolfe. They all came out. Flair yelled at the crowd to shut up, got some heat. Basically, they were talking about... there's a lot of history between Flair and Sting, but, you know, they're here together as this team. Hogan just basically told them to shut up. They said that their team is more powerful. When the time is right, Team Flair is going to find out who the remaining members of Team Hogan are. So there was kind of a little... You're given this little wink and a nudge, and you're told to stay tuned, because you're going to find out the rest of the story here. Basically, everyone on Team Flair started to head down to the ring, but Jarrett got on the mic and basically called out Sting, told him to drop the bat, get in the ring. He owes everybody an answer, and Sting refuses to answer, won't tell him why the dark side has finally come out of him, why he has suddenly, you know, turned heel, so to speak. And so Jarrett, you know, holding out the mic for him, Sting won't answer, so Jarrett slaps Sting across the face. The two of them start to get into a fight here, and Sting hits the Scorpion Death Drop on Jarrett, and Hogan and Abyss just kind of stand there, and they stare at him, and then as soon as the move is done, Hogan and Abyss chase after him, and Sting runs away. Flair basically tells everybody to hit the ring, and they attack, big beatdown. Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam come running through the crowd. They jump in, get in the fight, clear everybody out. And basically they go to commercial and they say, come back, it'll be RVD versus James Storm. So we come back from commercial, the two of them are going at it. They went about, you know, 5.5 minutes. I guess they, you know, were supposed to be going at it during the commercial, so there was a little more wrestling time you didn't see, but you know, but still, not a whole lot to this match here. And commentary seemed more worried about reminding everybody to call their friends, let them know TNA was on early tonight. Make sure they tune in, check out the first hour, or they're going to miss it. More than they were worried about talking about this match. And the match was just wasn't really anything that special. It seemed like if you're going to have Rob Van Dam, you know, do a run-in, have it go to a match, it should seem a little bigger than this, and it just really didn't seem like it didn't have that much hype. And in the long run, it didn't really feel like it didn't really matter. But anyway, regardless, Rob Van Dam ended up getting James Storm down over in the corner. He hit the split-legged moonsault, got the pin. So RVD was sitting there celebrating, doing his chant with the crowd, and James Storm grabbed his beer bottle, smashed it over RVD's head, beat him a couple times, medics ran down, referees ran down, everybody was trying to help him. Security had to hold back Storm, who tried to attack him again. They sold RVD like maybe, you know, glass had gotten to his eye or something. He's messed up. He didn't get back up. He had to have a lot of help in order to leave, so I guess, as far as that goes, there may be a storyline there. We'll have to see how it plays out. If there is a storyline going on, Rob Van Dam versus James Storm, I guess, could be fine in the long run. Although, I don't want to see him break up beer money to do it. And I don't necessarily want to see Jeff Hardy and RVD as a tag team against beer money. But I guess, you know, there are worse decisions they could make. After we came back from the commercial, they still showed Van Dam being tended to by the medics and whatever, bloody towel, all that kind of stuff. James Storm was doing the RVD bits, doing the thumb pointing thing, and doing his beer money instead of RVD, and you know, playing around like that. They had Jeff Hardy run out and attack James Storm. He went down to the ring to check on RVD. They had Robert Roode jump out of the crowd and hit a spine buster on Jeff Hardy. So, again, I don't know if it's supposed to be tag team versus tag team or if they're setting up, you know, maybe it'll be some sort of handicap match until RVD is, you know, healed enough to make a comeback or something. I could see one of those storylines playing out, but we cut backstage at Christy Hemme interviewing a bunch of the talking to a bunch of the knockouts. ODB made a pass at AJ Styles. Tara Angelina fought with each other. Hamada said something in Japanese. Nobody had any idea what she was saying. I guess it was supposed to be funny, but they had Rob Terry versus Homicide. This went about 2 minutes. They basically just had Rob Terry. I mean, Rob Terry is a huge freak, you know, genetic freak. He's got that Bobby Lashley roided out build. And they just had Rob Terry just, you know, beat up Homicide real quick, hit the power slam, got the pin. Crowd really didn't care, so Homicide got a chair, beat Terry hard with it. These were hard, unprotected chair shots. These were brutal ECW New Jack chair shots. These are the type of chair shots that basically WWE has said they're never going to do again because guys like, I don't know, Chris Benoit have been going nuts. Test's head, after he died, they found his brain had a lot of the holes in it that come from that type of impact. They've just basically said those are unsafe, shouldn't be done. So, of course, TNA did them here a bunch of times. They then just had Rob Terry do a slam on him. This brought out Orlando Jordan. Orlando Jordan stood on the stage, sprayed cream all over himself, squirted it on him like a dude had done his dude thing all over Orlando Jordan's chest. Orlando Jordan pulled out a strawberry, dipped it in the cream, and ate it.
Berries and cream, all little ladle of berries and cream.
That should have been his entrance music. Anyway. They showed all the knockouts getting ready for their big lockbox match. They had, here are the rules. Two women in the ring at one time. If someone can basically tag in anybody else. They had all these teams and singles mixed together. You tag somebody in. If they get a pin, the person who got the pin and the person pinned are both eliminated from the match, but the person who got the pin gets to take one of the lockbox keys. So therefore, you're going to have four winners, four losers. As soon as you win a key, you're out of the match. It continues. They spent, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes on the match total. After about the first minute, they had Tara get a win. She got a key. She beat, was it Taylor Rain, I believe it was. They had Daphne pinning Hamada. They had Velvet pinning ODB, and it came down to Lacey Von Erich versus Angelina Love. Angelina hit the lights out, pinned Lacey Von Erich. So they got their keys. They were leaving. They announced next was going to be the ladder match. So they basically cut to a commercial, and they come back, and you see Mr. Anderson coming out and getting the ladder and getting in the ring. And then they go to another commercial, and they come back, and you see Kurt Angle and Ken Anderson are already wrestling, and they're already fighting, and they go at it for a little bit, and then finally the bell rings to start the match. So you kind of got this feeling that the match started, these guys started fighting 3 or 4 minutes before the match actually started, before the bell rang. But because it's during a commercial break, they didn't acknowledge it or whatever. They didn't show you clips of anything. But anyway, they had about 10 minutes in this ladder match, and to be fair, both guys worked very, very hard. There were a lot of problematic spots. There was one spot where Ken Anderson climbed up the ladder to get to the key, and Kurt Angle was down, nowhere to be found, so he went as slow as he possibly could. He would walk up a step and reach and couldn't get the key, and so he'd stop and look down and breathe and go up the next step and tried to climb on top of the ladder and crotch himself on it and just on and on and on. There were lots of times where timing was off. But, I mean, the guys, you could tell that they were working as hard as they could. They were doing a lot of moves onto the ladder, trying to find excuses to use the ladder, trying to make it memorable, and it was, it was okay. It was scary a couple times. It looked like Kurt Angle had broken his neck again, but basically what happened is Kurt Angle ends up going up the ladder, trying to get the key, and Ken Anderson grabs the dog tags, wraps them around Kurt Angle's neck, and starts choking him. Or not his dog tags, I'm sorry, his warrior medal. Anyway, he's choking Kurt Angle as Kurt Angle's climbing up this ladder, and Kurt Angle keeps struggling and fighting, and Ken Anderson's choking and choking, and Kurt gets up to the top, and he's reaching up, and he's touching the key, and the key, this whole match was trying to get this key that unlocks the cage at lockdown. So Kurt Angle's going to have this key that he can use. And they were hanging the key up there. And in order for you to know that there's this key up there that they're trying to grab, they had the key on this big piece of wood. And they had taken black paint and a paintbrush. And they had someone quickly paint on there. I think it said cage key. And this looked like every crappy gas station bathroom key. Like, if you've ever stopped at, like, a Texaco in the middle of nowhere and had to use the bathroom, and the bathrooms are attached on the outside, And you ask them, you know, it says you must see attendant for the bathroom key because they don't want hobos sleeping in there or Orlando Jordan doing random hookups with truckers in there or whatever. So you have to go up and get the key. That's what this key looked like, this huge plank of wood, poorly written cage key on it, hanging up there. It looked, I think it was a prop from Ernest Goes to Camp. I'm not sure, but regardless, Kurt Angle's trying to grab that plank of wood, can't do it, eventually just falls down, and Ken Anderson climbs up, grabs the key, and he wins. So they had Anderson get on the mic, talk about how he won. He had the key that's going to, you know, give him the win at this match. You know, for the most part, again, they both worked really hard, but their timing was off a lot of times. One guy would climb on the match, and the other guy was trying to catch up to him and whatever. So you have to kind of, you do have to kind of fault it a little bit on that. As far as the key looking like the bathroom stall key, that doesn't really hurt the match, but it hurts TNA's production. You know, they're in the Impact Zone, a soundstage at Universal Studios, which is so overproduced for that tiny little space that they're in, and yet, you know, they have this gas station bathroom key. Anyway, it's still not been explained to us why they need a key. Like, maybe you can only win the match by using the key to get out. But then, in that case, why have one guy win the key in a ladder match? Why not have it hanging from the top of the cage or something? I don't know. They haven't really explained the point. I mean, can you still win by pinfall or submission? Or is it only by unlocking the door and getting out? I don't know. Regardless, went backstage, had Jeremy Borash interviewing Hulk Hogan, talked about how Eric Bischoff wasn't there. Hogan said he didn't want to talk about Bischoff, but he wanted to talk about Bubba the Love Sponge. Bubba showed up. They pushed Borash off screen, and Bubba just basically said, you know, he hooked up with the band because they are more fun than Hogan. And then he leaves, and Hogan and Black Machismo came back. Machismo did the Randy Savage thing again, talked about having each other's back, being there for him. Hogan said he needed the help, et cetera, et cetera. They showed the band arriving at the building and go to commercial. Come back. They show the lock boxes again to get you hyped up for that. That apparently is your main event tonight. Is you're going to see the lockboxes getting unlocked. Showed Matt Morgan backstage with Christy Hemme. He is the sole tag team champion because Hernandez is out. He basically said that we, talking about himself, we are the tag team champions. We are going to defend our tag titles. And they said next up is a number one contenders tag match. And whoever wins will face Matt Morgan. It was fine. I wish they had done something more with the whole injury angle. Maybe showed him rehabbing, showed Hernandez at home, in the hospital, something like that. It would have been better if, you know, I would have been happier if they had done one of those cheesy 70s, 80s wrestling skits where you see Hernandez in the hospital. Maybe talking about how Obamacare is going to bring him back to life. The nurses walk out of the room. Matt Morgan comes climbing through the window, starts beating him with the bedpan, chokes him out with the IV drip, flips over his hospital bed, and then leaves him there. I think that would have been a little more interesting, but regardless. Next up, they had the Motor City Machine Guns against Team 3D for the number one contenders match. It went maybe 2 minutes before the band came out. They attacked everybody, just beat everybody up, beat the crap out of Team 3D, spray-painted the back of them, hit them with brass knuckles, all of that kind of stuff. They went to a commercial, and when they came back, they had Bubba the Love Sponge in the ring with the band, and Kevin Nash just basically said, "Now, from now on, they're running the show." Nash said that Hulk Hogan has spent too much time worrying about Ric Flair, and but now he's going to have to worry about the band because they're his worst nightmare. He said, "For 15 years, we've been carrying your ass, and therefore, you know, now it's time to pay up or whatever. Not sure exactly what the point of this is, but I guess they want to run Hogan Raw, so fine. Not sure why you need to come out and break up this tag match as opposed to just having those guys go out and cut a promo. Would have been nice to see the Motor City Machine Guns wrestle tonight, but we didn't get that. They had an interview with the Pope, who talked about his match at the pay-per-view with AJ Styles for the TNA title, then started talking about Desmond Wolfe. Wolfe and Chelsea came in, interrupted his promo, basically said, I shouldn't have to give Pope a rematch. I should be the one facing AJ Styles at Lockdown. And Pope just basically said, fine, if you can beat me tonight, you can have the title match at Lockdown. Which isn't really something that the... A face should be able to trick the heel into putting his match on the line, his title shot. I don't think a face should really just kind of give up on it, especially when it's a cocky face like the Pope. I don't know. It just that doesn't work for me as well, to have a confident baby face putting up his title match like that against a guy that, you know, who really isn't the next person he should be worried about. You know what I mean? The next guy really that Pope is worried about is AJ Styles, because he's got a chance to take AJ Styles' title at the pay-per-view. So he shouldn't be worried about a guy like Desmond Wolfe. He's got to wrestle him tonight, but long-term, he really shouldn't care. They had Doug Williams come out, cut a promo, said he wanted to be Douglas Williams. He said he was sick of the acrobats and trapeze artists that make up the X Division. He wanted to see real wrestlers that know the art of technical wrestling. Therefore, he's going to show how great he is. He's going to have a gauntlet match with Generation Me. So the Young Bucks came out. They went about 3 minutes. Doug Williams beat one of the Bucks with a suplex into a bridge, got a three count. Then took the other Young Buck, beat him up for a bit, put him in a guillotine choke, made him tap out. After the match, Williams kept holding the choke, kept holding the guillotine, and so Shannon Moore ran down, attacked Doug Williams, pulled out his book of Dilly Whistle or whatever it's called, Dilly Whack, Tally Whack, Tally Ho, whatever it's called. Just basically said he didn't want any more boring-ass wrestlers like Williams in the X Division. He wanted a title shot at Lockdown, and he said, welcome to glam rock. So basically, threw out a bunch of catchphrases, his tallywhacker book thing, and called for a title shot. And for whatever reason, Doug Williams is supposed to just go, yeah, I hate this guy, so I'm going to give him a title shot. Like, the heel standing up for what he believes, his focus really should be finding another guy who can be a good technical wrestler and say, I'm going to give this guy my title match. And the X Division guys should go to a guy like Hogan and say, listen, this is X Division. These should be X Division matches. He should be picking one of us, and have Hogan put together some big X Division match to find the number one contender for Doug Williams, saying he doesn't get to pick his own opponents. I don't know. It's just one of these things where they wanted to have a particular angle, so they put something silly together. But, I'm just not sure what it is that we're supposed to be seeing in Shannon Moore. I don't know anybody who thinks he's that great of a talent. I don't know, unless it's part of the deal with bringing in Jeff Hardy. They just have to have Jeff Hardy there, but they had Christy Hemme doing an interview backstage with Team 3D. They talked about Wolfpack as disrespectful pricks. They said Wolfpack and Team 3D have never crossed paths, but it's going to happen again next week, proving once again TNA wants to see 1998 wrestle 2002 here in 2010 on Monday Impact. So set up that match for next week. They had Desmond Wolfe in the ring as they came back from commercial. They brought out the Pope. Pope's walking down the ring. Desmond Wolfe charges at him. They wrestle for about 2 minutes. Pope hits the code breaker and gets the pin. So AJ Styles runs down, starts beating up Pope. Abyss runs down and chases off AJ Styles. Wolf and Abyss start fighting, so Styles jumps back into the ring. They all start going, you know, back and forth. They grab a fire extinguisher. They beat Abyss with it, and they have Wolf and AJ Styles celebrating, you know, beating up the Pope and Abyss in this underhanded heel-like fashion. Go to commercial, come back. Jeremy Borash says, this is the moment we've all been waiting for, our main event for tonight, unlocking the lockboxes. Velvet Sky, Tara, Angelina Love, Daphne, they were all standing next to their lockboxes. Borash reminded us again what could be in there. Walked up to Velvet, had her open the first case. She got the open contract, so she has the ability to challenge anyone, anywhere, at any time with the contract. They had Tara up next, and Borash pointed out that she's never done a strip tease, and it could be her title, could be her spider. She opened the box. It was her spider. She was happy to see the spider, and Borash says, but of course, this means that you are no longer the Knockouts champion, and suddenly Tara was sad. They opened the next two boxes simultaneously. Angelina Love and Daphne opened their boxes. Love got the TNA Knockouts title, so she started celebrating. Daphne was informed that she had gotten the strip tease. She was going to have to go down to the ring and do it. She looked very sad. She looked humiliated. She looked dejected. She headed down to the ring. She started to get upset. She started to pull off little bits of clothing. Lacey Von Erich came out and hit Daphne from behind with the ugly stick. She basically said she was the one there to strip because that's what people want to see. So she started to pull off her clothing. They cut to the stage. They had Tara and Love fighting over the Knockouts title, kind of pulling it back and forth, back and forth. Started getting into a tussle, throwing punches. They started fighting on the entryway ramp. They had Angelina Love grab the microphone, and she said, Lacey, you turned up the heat in here tonight, but number one rule of the beautiful people is that you don't upstage the other. Therefore, I'm announcing I'm going to cash in my open contract next week against Angelina Love for her title. She said it's going to be a leather and lace match. She said, you bring your lace, I'll bring my leather, and I'll kick your ass all over that ring, bitch. And Tara and Angelina Love started to fight again, and security was trying to pull them apart, and the show went off the air. And this was not an ending that made me happy. There were so many problems with this. Apparently, TNA management went out and told people who were standing in line coming in for the show tonight that this is not going to be a family-friendly show. People had kids. They shouldn't be there. I guess, you know, it's fine if your thing is to go out. You want to present a different product. WWE has said, of course, that they're trying to be more PG. People have said they want more cutting edge. I think cutting edge, controversial, is one thing. I was kind of uncomfortable watching a lot of this. On the one hand, it seemed poorly thought out, and it seemed poorly acted, if you will. But on the other hand, it just kind of felt like, If I was watching this, and someone, a friend, family member, someone else walked into the room, I would be embarrassed to be watching this. I would turn it off. I would just be like, oh gosh, I don't need anyone to know that I'm watching this on TV right now. You know? I don't know if I ever felt that same way when Stacy Keibler and Tori Wilson were doing Gravy Bowl matches, because I think there was still kind of a certain level of stupidity to the absurdness of the match, whereas opposed to this, when Lacey Von Erich runs out with the ugly stick looks like basically a sex toy, you know? And it just seems so desperate to try to get people to pay attention. We're going to be controversial for the sake of being controversial just to make people go, ooh, and watch. And it ends up feeling more like an XPW show as opposed to a classic ECW show when you're trying to do something, you know, more adult, more mature, more hardcore. It's less about presenting something that looks tough to a crowd who's upset with wrestling being called fake. Less about that and more about, hey, 13-year-old boys, watch the show. You might be able to see boobs. That's just how I feel about it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just turning into that big prude that my dad was, now that I have kids and now that I'm older. But it just felt there was a lot of things between what Orlando Jordan does and what the Knockouts were doing here tonight. It just felt like a lot of, if this is what they're doing in the future, I'm probably not going to be watching anymore. Because one, this is not what I want to see when I want to go see a wrestling match. And two, again, I'm embarrassed. It's I'm an adult, and if I want to see titillating women doing naughty things, I've got the internet. You know, I don't need a wrestling show for that. If you want to have some fun with some of the characters, the way they play off each other, that's one thing. But this just seemed so cheap. I mean, cheap. Yes, cheap is really the word. So, all in all, thumbs down to TNA. Raw was just another Raw. Lost focus after WrestleMania. Neither show was great. I think there's some big basketball games on last night or something, so that's probably going to cut into the rating a little bit. So I think both shows are not going to have good ratings as we get the ratings this week. And I think, you know, both shows turned off people to their product and what they're going to be seeing next week. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with next week. Hopefully both companies can put together a show that really feels like a wrestling show with wrestling on it, with a bunch of wrestlers. You know, WWE is going to have David Hasselhoff, which I know automatically turns off a whole bunch of fans. And who knows what we're going to get with TNA next week. I'm hoping that the leather and lace match at least has something interesting to it beyond trying to just give you, you know, whatever. It's just some cheap arousal, you know. But anyway, that's just me. Again, maybe I'm just getting old and prudish, but that's how I felt about the shows tonight. Let me know what you think. Feel free to call us. Leave us a voicemail. Area code 217-953-4025. You can send me an email, dirt@popculture.net. Or, of course, you can stop by lockerroomhq.com. Enter the forums, join us down in the pro wrestling forum of the Pop Culture Network, and let us know what you thought. But anyway, that's going to wrap it up for today, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you on Friday with your advance look at Friday Night SmackDown.